keep in mind that to be an effective communicator in the various settings in which you must function, a manager needs not only strong speaking skills, but a manager needs strong listening skills and feedback skills. These skills are particularly critical because managers spend a large portion of their time communicating orally. First, let's look at listening skills. Remember that receivers need to expend considerable effort to be sure that they have decoded and interpreted the message that the sender intended. Since managers rely heavily on the information inputs that they receive from oral communication, their listening skills are particularly crucial. Experts on listening often differentiate between listening that is relatively passive, in which the listener follows the general gist of the words being spoken, and listening that is active. Active listening is the process in which a listener actively participates in attempting to grasp the facts and the feelings being expressed by the sender. Actively listening for both the content and the feelings is important in understanding the total meaning of the message. Managers leave themselves at a disadvantage when they are not good listeners. Here are some guidelines offered by Catherine Bartle and David Martin in their book, Management. These guidelines certainly are for implementation in active listening. Number one, listen patiently to what the other person has to say, even though you may believe it is wrong or irrelevant. Indicate simple acceptance, not necessarily agreement, but simple acceptance by nodding or injecting an occasional uh-huh or I see. Number two, try to understand the feeling the person is expressing as well as the intellectual content. Most of us have difficulty talking clearly about our feelings, so careful attention is required. Number three, restate the person's feeling briefly but accurately. At this stage, simply serve as a mirror and encourage the other person to continue talking. Occasionally make a summary response such as, you think you're in a dead-end job, or you feel the manager's playing favorites. In doing so, keep your tone neutral and try not to lead the person to your pet conclusions. Number four, allow time for the discussion to continue without interruption, and try to separate the conversation from more official communication of company plans. That is, do not make the conversation any more authoritative than it already is by virtue of your position in the organization. Number five, avoid direct questions and arguments about facts. Refrain from saying such things as, well, that's just not so, or hold on a minute, let's look at the facts, or, well, prove it. You may want to review evidence later, but a review is irrelevant to how a person feels. Number six, when the other person does touch a point you do want to know more about, simply repeat his statement as a question. For instance, if the person remarks, nobody can break even on his expense account, you can probe by replying, you say no one breaks even on expenses? With this encouragement, he will probably expand on the previous statement. Number seven, listen for what isn't said. Evasions of pertinent points, or perhaps of pertinent ideas, or perhaps too ready agreements with common cliches. Such omissions may be clues to a bothersome fact the person wishes were not true. Listen not only to what is said, but for what isn't said. Number eight, the other person appears to genuinely want your viewpoint. Be honest in your reply, but remember, in the listening stage, try to limit the expression of your views, since these may condition or suppress what the other person says. Number nine, Focus on the content of the message. Try not to think about your next statement until the person is finished talking. And number 10, don't make judgments until all information has been conveyed. Other interpersonal communication skills that are particularly important for managers center around the issue of feedback, both giving and receiving feedback. Effective feedback has several main characteristics. It focuses on the relative behaviors or outcomes rather than on the individual as a person. It deals with specific, observable behavior rather than generalities. Perceptions, reactions, and opinions are labeled as such rather than presented as facts. Finally, feedback spells out what individuals can do to improve themselves. Being skilled in giving feedback makes the task of effectively guiding subordinates considerably easier and increases the prospects for mutual success. In addition to giving more feedback, be able to receive feedback is also important. Typically, most individuals have no difficulty receiving positive feedback. Receiving feedback that is negative is generally more problematic. Yet the way in which managers and others react to feedback is often a factor influencing how much feedback they receive. When you're receiving negative feedback, it's often helpful to paraphrase what is being said so that you can check your perceptions. It's also good to ask for clarification, ask for examples regarding any points that are unclear or which you disagree, and certainly avoid reacting defensively. Dr. Roger Fritz, in his book, Think Like a Manager, reminds us that one half of the total communication process is listening. Most people are convinced that they are good listeners. And certainly it would be wonderful if that were true. But the sad fact is, most of us do a lousy job of listening. The point has been proven in numerous studies reveal that we absorb only about 30% of what we hear. And this low percentage figure occurs when conditions for listening are just about perfect. When the environment is less than ideal, the rate of listening efficiently tumbles to disastrous levels. When you fail to listen, then you risk misreading people's intentions. You risk misinterpreting ideas. You risk confusing the issues. You risk misjudging people's qualifications. You risk getting instructions wrong. You risk jumping to wrong conclusions. And you also risk antagonizing people. Have you ever wondered just how good a listener you are? Being a good listener is not just resisting the impulse to interrupt a speaker. It's much more complicated than that. In reality, to be a good listener, a conscious effort must be made. A basic technique called reflection will help a manager listen effectively. Reflection is a process whereby a person attempts to repeat and clarify what he or she believes the other person is saying. This technique places greater emphasis on listening than it does on talking. When both parties engage in reflection, they get into each other's frame of reference rather than listening and responding from their own. The result is more accurate two-way communication. Now, there are certain other listening techniques which can be applied to enhance our listening effectiveness. For example, keep in mind the objectives in listening. I think the objectives in listening would certainly include the following items. Number one, we want people to talk freely and frankly. Number two, we want them to cover matters and problems that are important to them. Number three, we want them to furnish as much information as they can. Number four, we want them to get greater insight and greater understanding of the problem as they talk about it. Number five, we want them to try to see the causes and the reasons for the problem, not just the symptoms. Therefore, in listening, there are some do's and don'ts to remember. For example, number one, show interest. Number two, be understanding of the other person. Number 3, express empathy. Number 4, single out the problem. Number 5, listen for causes to the problem. Number 6, help the speaker associate the problem with the cause. Number 7, encourage the speaker to develop competence and motivation to solve his own problems. Number 8, cultivate the ability to be silent. Successful people usually know how to remain silent. What an interesting point for application. Number 9, do not argue. Number 10, do not interrupt. Number 11, do not pass judgment. Number 12, do not give advice too quickly or in advance of hearing, listening, comprehending, understanding what the other person has to say. 13, do not jump to conclusions. And 14, do not let the speaker's sentiments too directly act on your own. Now, as is true of all behavior, listening is contagious, whether between two people or even among a large group of people. But to ensure good communication, one must first take the responsibility for establishing reliable listening patterns. The person who listens consistently with understanding is one who is eventually most likely to be listened to. Those who invest the time and effort necessary for improving their personal listening skills not only experience an increase in their effectiveness, they also upgrade the quality of their relationship with their family and their business acquaintances. Remember, you are listening poorly when you are so busy framing your reply that your thinking gets in the way of your seeing and hearing. Remember, you're listening poorly when you feel dull and bored and unable to attend each word. Remember, you're listening poorly when you are willing to dismiss the communicator as unimportant because he or she cannot hurt you. On the other hand, you are listening well when you're able to repeat back what has just been said to you. And you're listening well when you see the body language that goes with the verbal message. And you're listening well when you are not embarrassed to ask for a moment to think when you've been too busy listening to frame your reply. And you're listening well when you habitually find value in every person who seeks to communicate with you. Keep in mind that one way to enhance your listening techniques is to develop the skill of asking good questions. The power of the question lies in the fact that it compels an answer. If we ask the right questions, we will get the right answers in terms of information or experience or reactions or other data that we see. If we ask the wrong questions, then we'll always get the wrong answers. Asking has many advantages over telling. In the first place, for managers to manage effectively, they must have adequate information. Indeed, people's decisions are only as good as the information upon which they are based. Managers can never know as much about certain problems as their subordinates. If they try to make decisions concerning subordinates without sufficient and adequate information, they will make poor decisions and will lose the respect and willing cooperation of their subordinates. There's no way that a manager can gather certain kinds of information without doing a good, efficient, effective job of asking the right questions. The higher people advance in management hierarchy, the more they're removed from the individuals, the place where actual work is performed. Consequently, they must rely more and more on written communication, reports, memoranda, and the like, as well as oral communication. The quality and adequacy of the communication from others depend to a large degree on the effectiveness of the questions that are being directed to them. In using question methods, it is important that the user have a positive attitude toward the importance of asking rather than telling, and equally important, a conviction that people, because of their unique experience, background, and training, can positively and potentially contribute unique information. It's important that a manager understand the different types of questions that can be posed within a conversation. You must understand their nature. You must understand their purpose. You must understand how to use them. You must also develop skill and proficiency in using questioning techniques in various situations to gain the information, the facts that are necessary for you to understand, to know, to comprehend, and to be able to make correct conclusions and decisions. I think some of the basic types of questions would certainly include these. First of all, you have factual questions. Now, the purpose of a factual question is to get additional information to open discussion. Examples would include what, where, why, when, who, how. These are factual questions. Second basic type of question would be an explanatory question. The purpose of an explanatory question is to get reasons and explanations, to broaden discussion, and to develop additional information. Examples would include, in what way would this help solve the problem? Well, what other aspects of this should be considered? Well, tell me, just how would this be done? And then, not only are there factual questions and explanatory questions, but number three, there are justifying questions. The purpose of a justifying question is to challenge old ideas and really to develop new ideas and to get down to reasoning and proof. Examples of justifying questions would be, why do you think so? How do you know? What evidence do you have? So you've got factual questions, explanatory questions, justifying questions. You also have leading questions. The purpose of a leading question is to introduce a new idea or to advance a suggestion of your own to others. Examples of leading questions would be, should we consider this as a possible solution? Would you think this would be a feasible alternative? And then a fifth type is the hypothetical question. The purpose of a hypothetical question is to develop new ideas, to suggest another possible, perhaps even unpopular opinion, or to change the course of the discussion. An example of this would include, well, suppose we did it this way, what would happen? Another company does this. Is that feasible here? And then you have alternative questions. Now, the purpose of an alternative question is to make decisions between alternatives and to get agreement. Examples would include, well, which one of these solutions is best? Do you think this represents our choice in preference to something else? Alternative questions. And then there are coordinating questions. The purpose of a coordinated question is to develop a consensus. In other words, to get an agreement, to take action. Examples would include, can we conclude that this is the next step? Is there general agreement then that this is the plan we want? Coordinating questions. Now, in addition to active listening, and that's what we've been discussing in the last few moments, in addition to active listening, we must also mention careful reading. Reading mistakes are common and costly. Therefore, read memos as soon as possible before it's too late to respond. Skip most of your reading materials, but read important memos, documents, and passages slowly and carefully. Note important points for later referral. Don't limit your reading to items about your particular job skill or technical expertise. Read materials that fall outside of your immediate concern. You never know when a creative idea that will help in your work will be inspired by a novel, a biography, a sports story, an inspirational article, or an item about a problem in another business or industry. So yes, skim most of your reading materials, but read important memos, documents, and passages slowly and carefully. Also, effective communicators, senders as well as receivers, are capable of observing and interpreting nonverbal communications. For example, by reading nonverbal cues, presenters can determine how their talk is going and they can adjust their approach if necessary. Some companies train their sales force to interpret the nonverbal signals of a potential customer. People can also decode nonverbal signals to determine whether a sender is being truthful or deceitful. Deceitful communicators, it has been said, maintain less eye contact, make either more or fewer body movements than usual, and smile either too much or too little. Verbally, they offer few specifics than truthful senders do. Many studies have compared good and poor supervisors' communication skills. Supervisors who receive high evaluations from their bosses exhibit several key characteristics. First, they communicate more information. For example, they give advance notice of impending changes. They explain the reasons behind policies and regulations, and they enjoy conversing with their subordinates. Second, effective supervisors prefer asking rather than telling. Third, they are sensitive to people's feelings and needs. For example, they're careful to reprimand privately rather than publicly. Finally, they are willing, empathetic listeners. They respond with understanding to all the questions from employees, and they give fair consideration to it and are willing to take appropriate action on any complaints or suggestions that are given. Thus, effective managers are more communication-minded than ineffective managers. People who lack confidence in their organizational skills, both oral and written, tend to avoid communication situations altogether. This tendency would be a severe handicap for any manager who wanted to enhance her or his unit's performance. This brings us to the end of three